Pennsylvania is one place jobs are being created thanks to a natural gas drilling boom. It's a welcome sign for Rust Belt cities accustomed to bad economic news. NPR's Jeff Brady begins his report in Youngstown, Ohio.
The Briar Hill neighborhood has been relatively quiet for the past few decades, ever since the huge steel mills here shut down. But today, it's noisy again.
What's really exciting to me is for many, many years, this area was the poster child for the Rust Belt economy.
Walt Good points to shuttered steel mills that look like huge shadows. Nearby are weed-filled lots where houses used to stand. Good works for the local chamber, and it's his job to attract new companies. The natural gas drilling boom in nearby Pennsylvania is making that easier.
The phone is definitely ringing more.
Controversial technologies like hydraulic fracturing allow drillers to bring vast quantities of gas up to the surface. Just this year, more than 1,200 wells have been drilled into the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania. Each well needs thousands of feet of steel pipe. So off in the distance, there's a huge mill under construction.
What we're seeing truly is a renaissance in a place where people thought it wouldn't happen.
A French company, Vallourec, owns the mill.
It's a $650 million U.S. dollar investment, about 1 million square feet.
Joel Mastrovich is president and COO of Vallourec's U.S. company, V&M Star. He says Youngstown is an attractive place to build the new seamless pipe mill. There's infrastructure and an experienced workforce already here. Plus, it's close to the Marcellus.
We'll be able to produce the pipe, finish it here, and send it to a customer that's maybe 100 miles away.
Production begins in a few months, but already the Briar Hill neighborhood is perking back up. Stacy Sedita recently opened a sandwich shop in a brick building that had been empty for years.
Everything's homemade, homemade meatball sandwiches, sausage sandwiches are homemade, pepperoni rolls, hoagie rolls, sausage rolls, all homemade.
Sedita says with about 1,000 construction workers building the mill and the promise of 350 permanent workers later, launching her business now made sense.
My father is a contractor, and he's been telling me for a little while that V&M is going to really start. So that's when I found this building and decided it was time.
Around the region, there are many stories of businesses doing well because of the drilling boom. U.S. Steel executive Doug Matthews says he was in the small town of Williamsport, Pennsylvania last winter.
And in the month of January, I had a difficult time finding a hotel room. And that was a little bit surprising. You wouldn't expect that at that time of the year.
Matthews is the senior vice president of tubular operations at U.S. Steel. That means his division makes the pipes and tubes the gas drilling industry uses. U.S. Steel is based in Pittsburgh, and it's still a big driver for the local economy. When it does well, so do its contractors. Chapman Corporation is a construction and engineering firm that's expanding and building a huge new shop at a time many of its peers elsewhere are laying off people. Rich Tomczyk is vice president of sales and marketing.
The $6 million investment that we're putting into our new fabrication facility shows our confidence that the Marcella Shell play is here to stay. It's not a short-term thing. It's going to be around for 20-plus years.
The Marcellus already has brought more jobs to the region, even as the rest of the country is suffering. At Pennsylvania's Department of Labor and Industry, Sue McCurgy says the number of people working directly for the oil and gas industry, jobs like roustabouts and drill operators, has risen from 5,500 in 2008 to nearly 12,000.
This is almost 117% growth. If anyone is listening to the media, is listening to the news, I would say they wouldn't find such numbers anywhere else in any other industry.
Nearly three-quarters of the new hires are Pennsylvania residents, says McCurgy, and the jobs pay well, about $76,000 a year on average. There also are new jobs in areas you might not imagine at first. This summer, the Sierra Club hired someone to direct its natural gas reform campaign in Pennsylvania. Now, Deb Nardone wants the state to hire more regulators to look over the drillers' shoulders.
And also an increase in staff that are doing research, that are collecting good science, that are monitoring the environmental impacts, whether it's air quality or water quality.
But while natural gas companies have plenty of profits to hire new workers, state governments are having a more difficult time finding money to pay for more employees. Jeff Brady, NPR News.
If you leave Wall Street and head up the highway north a few hundred miles, you reach Rochester, New York, the headquarters of the Eastman Kodak Company. About half of Kodak's 38,000 retirees live around there, and they are watching closely as the film pioneer struggles to turn a profit in the digital age. As Julie Phillip from member station WXXI reports, the fate of many retirees is tied to the fate of Kodak itself.
I'm Bob Volpe. I'm the president of ECRA.
ECRA represents Kodak retirees, and over the past 2 weeks, close to 1,000 retirees have showed up for ECRA meetings because they're worried the struggling company will cut off their health care benefits.
We can't control what Kodak does. All we can do is control our reaction. Today, you might hear some bad news.
For example, if Kodak is bought out, declares bankruptcy, or simply decides it can no longer afford the millions it spends every year on retiree health insurance, it can just stop providing it. If that happens, most Kodak retirees under 65 won't qualify for Medicare. And the AARP's Bill Ferris says that would mean a serious case of sticker shock.
When you buy health care alone, it's the most expensive you can buy. When companies go buy health care, they're buying for a large group of people. The individual market in New York is very expensive.
That's what retiree Jake Pietrzewski found out at the ECRA meetings. Private health insurance could add $2,500 to his monthly expenses.
We're spending, on average, $3,500 a month now. You're going to throw on top of that almost double your expenses. It's like, wow.
Jake is 60 years old. His wife, Diane, is 59. He started working as a Kodak technician in 1971.
We felt very secure that, you know, you spend a lifetime at Kodak. You were set.
The first year I was there, you know, I remember talking to one of the people that had been there, you know, 10 or 15 years. And he said, oh, yeah, Kodak's a great company. They're really solid, stable. They're as solid as the United States of America.
Jake and Diane bought a comfortable house, drove dependable cars, and paid cash for their son's college tuition. And they stashed away 20% of their income every single year. So they thought they did everything right and were in good shape to take an early retirement package in 2006, as long as Kodak kept its commitments.
Our financial advisor and the programs I looked at said, you know, we've saved enough, and with Social Security and managing our expenses, assuming we had health care, we should have enough money to last probably to our 90s, okay? But now this changes the whole equation. It's not going to last into our 80s. I mean, it's going to be gone.
The Pietrzewskis say they are preparing for the worst. Jake has thought about going back to work full time. And even though Diane was recently treated for breast cancer, they're also talking about going without health insurance. Weighing the options is stressful.
When we get together with friends and play cards or whatever, the conversation always gets to that.
Yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah, I must admit there's times where that fear creeps in.
Yeah.
Their story would have the founder of Kodak, George Eastman, turning in his grave, says ECRA president Bob Volpe. Kodak was among the nation's first companies to offer employee benefits like pensions and health care. Volpe says Eastman did that, in part, to keep his employees happy so unions wouldn't organize. But Volpe says there was more to it than that.
Number one, I believe, was just his personal belief that he had a responsibility to take care of people.
But taking care of the company is top priority at Kodak now. Company officials would not grant an interview for this story, but released a statement saying they are committed to becoming profitable again, and quote, we will not speculate on potential future events. For NPR News, I'm Julie Phillip.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Good morning. President Obama's jobs bill got its first big test in the Senate and, as was widely predicted, failed. The Senate, controlled by Democrats, could not meet the 60-vote threshold required to begin debate on the bill. Even some Democrats voted no. NPR's Tamara Keith reports on what happened and what's next.
Well before the test vote started, the result was a foregone conclusion. Democrats would need Republican support to begin debate. There was no way they were going to get it, and everyone knew it. The vote instead gave both sides another chance to accuse each other of doing horrible things for the sake of politics. Here's Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell.
Democrats have designed this bill to fail. They've designed their own bill to fail. in the hopes that anyone who votes against it will look bad for opposing a bill they mistakenly refer to as a jobs bill.
Senate Democrats did change how the job spending would be funded. They swapped out the president's proposed tax increase on families earning more than $250,000 a year in favor of a surtax on income over $1 million. That move made it much easier for Democrats to accuse Republicans of favoring millionaires and billionaires over unemployed Americans. Majority Leader Harry Reid said on the floor that the bill contains plenty of ideas Republicans have supported in the past.
Republicans oppose those ideas now, I guess, because they have a proven track record of creating jobs, all of these programs. But I guess Republicans think if the economy improves, it might help President Obama. So they root for the economy to fail and oppose every effort to improve it.
Reid later switched his vote to no for procedural reasons. Two other Democrats voted along with Republicans from the start. Leaders kept the vote open well into the night so a Democratic senator who had been out of town could add one last yes vote. It was purely symbolic. That extra vote showed a majority of senators supported moving forward on the bill, but it wasn't even close to the 60-vote threshold. This confirms what many have been saying ever since the president proposed his jobs bill last month. In its current form, it doesn't have a shot. House Majority Leader Eric Cantor wants to start working on parts of the bill with bipartisan support.
Hopefully this says this is the end of the political games, and hopefully it will also mean that the White House and the president will stop going out there demanding an all-or-nothing approach, pass my bill or else.
Cantor's list of possible areas for agreement includes incentives for hiring veterans, reworking the unemployment insurance system, and passing free trade agreements with Panama, Colombia, and South Korea. Those trade bills will come up in the House later today. In a statement, President Obama said he plans to work with Senate Democrats going forward to, quote, make sure that the individual proposals in this jobs bill get a vote as soon as possible. Tamara Keith, NPR News, The Capitol.